Greetings. This is Francesca, writer and producer on H.G. Wells' House of Regrets. I'm sure you want to get straight to the episode, so I'll be brief. We are thrilled to announce that H.G. Wells' House of Regrets is about to become a featured podcast on Voice FM. Voice FM is a local radio station in the UK, reaching listeners in the Southampton area of Hampshire, as well as locations as far out as Winchester. Most of you do not live in Hampshire, England, but for those of you who do, or know someone who does, you and your family and friends have the exciting opportunity to re-listen to the entire series of episodes live on air from start to finish in one linear weekly run. If you don't live in the area, don't feel left out. You can have the full listening experience on Voice FM's website, which has a live radio feed that you can listen to anywhere in the world. The first episode, Piloting the Time Machine, will be airing on Voice FM at 2 p.m. GMT on Sunday the 15th of January 2023. You can find links and more information in the description below. Now then, back to the show, where HG seems determined to interview a rather reclusive poet, but doesn't seem to be having much luck.
Greetings. This is H.G. Wells, log set S2, log 13. Today I find myself at the homestead in the leafy town of Amherst, Massachusetts, trying to communicate through the bedroom door of Miss Emily Dickinson. Miss Dickinson? Miss Dickinson, I wonder if I could... Possibly. Your sister said I could. It's just that I come all this way and... I realise it sounds far-fetched, but I genuinely have come all the way from the future to speak to you. I've constructed a time machine in order to travel through history, visiting my favourite writers. What's this? It's very neatly folded. Oh, it's got a little pressed yellow carnation in it. And a poem. It pains me to send forth a man who knocks upon my door. I beg you don't think ill of me, no, think me not a bore. For I'm loath to cross my threshold or wish a bright good morning. Especially to one who comes without polite forewarning. All right, yes, that is a fair point, Miss Dickinson, but in my defence, it's not a trivial thing to send a calling card 40 or so years into the past. This is a sticky wicket, all right. Well, Miss Lavinia did warn me that her sister is a bit reclusive. It seems a shame to have come all this way dragging that blasted phonautograph. But I suppose if she just won't speak to me, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm sorry for intruding upon your time, Miss Dickinson. I'll be on my way back to the 20th century shortly. I hope you don't mind if I dry myself on the fire here before I head off. Oh, that's much better. Oh, blasted Yorkshire. Why must it be so wet and dreary? Knowing my luck, I've caught a chill from the Bronte boy.
Bronte boy? Is that Branwell Bronte?
Yes, he wasn't at all well when I visited.
He died in 1848.
Yes, I know. I did explain. I am a time traveller. I came here in my...
In your time machine. Yes, I heard you the first time. Tell me, Mr. Wells, did you meet Emily?
Emily Bronte? Why, yes, I met her and all her sisters. Well, except the two dead ones, obviously.
Tell me about her. What was she like?
Well, she was a bit short with me, I suppose. in a very matter-of-fact Yorkshire way. But they were very hospitable. Charlotte made me a cup of tea. Let me see, what else? They seemed to bicker with each other a lot. But in that loving sort of way people who know each other well do. Yes, they seem like a close family who'd been through a lot of hardship together.
But what about Emily herself?
I'm trying to recall. I was quite distracted by being cold and wet, I'm afraid. Oh, she said she loved the moors and that they were beautiful. I suppose she must have loved nature.
As I love my garden, it pleases me, Mr. Wells, to think that we might be so similar, she and I, close with our families, loving nature. I always fancied that if we met, we might truly understand each other. We two who have walked all our lives with death as our shadow.
And constant companion.
Oh my goodness, Miss Dickinson, you're not,
I am not what?
I didn't realize you hadn't had time to dress. The white nightgown,
You may uncover your eyes, Mr. Wells. I am as dressed as I require to be. I simply prefer to wear white. The children in town like to tease me for it. I love children, but not when they are being so tiresome. It is hard enough to endure the bustle and the people in the street and by the college, without children being tiresome as well. I prefer the peace of my home, where I may think clearly.
Children can be very unpleasant sometimes, yes.
You are recording our conversation. Why?
For posterity. I record all my conversations with the writers I come to visit. I'm really very grateful you came out to speak to me, Miss Dickinson. And I am sorry to have called on you unexpectedly. Your sister was very kind. She seemed to think that you might enjoy the novelty. Otherwise, I shouldn't have bothered you.
Mr. Wells, you keep describing me as a writer, and yet I have barely published anything. A handful of poems, if that, and all heavily edited, of course. Heaven forfend my words should stand as written. Publishing is as foreign to me as firmament to Finn. So how is it that you come to me here, at my home, describing me as one of your favorite writers?
I came in my time machine, Miss Dickinson, as I said. You know, the other Emily, Miss Bronte, complained of a similar issue to you. She and her sisters expected to be heavily edited, so they wrote under male pseudonyms.
I am still not sure if I want the eyes of strangers ranging greedily over my words, sucking the life that I have poured into them with my pen. My words are for the friendly eyes I choose to send them to, the eyes of my trusted correspondents. Some of my words conceal secrets. Secrets intended only for their eyes. Things only they will understand. Loves forbidden and losses unforgotten. I have squirreled most of them away safely where no one shall see them, and made Vinnie promise to burn all my letters when I am gone.
There's another thing you share with Miss Bronte. Charlotte found her poetry and read it, and she was most displeased with her for doing so. Sisters will be sisters. I would resign yourself to the fact that Miss Lavinia will end up reading your poetry sooner or later. Unless you have done a very good job of hiding it indeed.
You may be right, Mr. Wells. I must move their hiding place regularly to be certain, and I shall make her renew her promise to burn my letters if I should predecease her.
That's not what I meant. Besides.
Besides what? Why do you hesitate, Mr. Wells?
I have certain rules I follow to preserve the timeline. I must tread lightly in the past in case I drastically change it, and so I shan't be able to tell you too much about your future, you understand?
I see. How conscientious of you.
I do try to be, yes. So, you understand, there are some things I cannot tell you about your future. Or how it is I've come to read your poetry.
Very well. I shall resign myself to the thought of future strangers in future centuries poring over my writing with grubby claws and judging eyes.
Your poetry is wonderful, Miss Dickinson, and I believe it absolutely should be shared with the world, even if you don't feel you can do that just now. The way you write about grief is deeply poignant and important, and I'm sure has offered comfort to a great many people.
Oh, yes. Grief. Grief is a constant companion all my days. She and death walk arm in arm with me through my garden. We discourse so often we know each other's conversation all too well. I first met them both at the deathbed of my dear friend and cousin, Sophia. They stood with me by her side after that cruel devil Typhus had finished his work on her innocent flesh and told me they would see me again.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Not as sorry as I. And so it shall continue throughout the years, with each beloved soul gone where I cannot follow. In time my ailing mother's suffering will end. In time my father shall pass from this world and take his strong opinions with him to bend the ear of the Savior. In time, I too shall take the hand of death. And at my funeral, the chief mourner shall speak that other Emily's words. There is not room for death, not atom that his might could render void, since thou art being and breath, and what thou art may never be.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I think I may have caught a cold.
Oh! I have been a bad hostess and not attended to your needs. Would you like some air to see the garden or the rest of the house?
Really, it's quite all right. I think I'd just like to have a sit down, if I may.
Of course. Some cake, then. Some tea?
Yes, thank you. That would be lovely.
I baked it myself. Fairly recently, I'm sure.
Ah.
I have been keeping the house and kitchen myself since our last servant, Margaret, left us to marry. I fancy I am better at it, if I do say so myself, but I am sure I will not be allowed to do it forever. Father won't allow it, and Mother is so ill all the time that we are constantly having to look after her.
Actually, this cake is rather good.
Thank you. I crystallized the violets myself. You should meet Mother. She likes to meet visitors when she can. Oh, wait. No. If you are ill, she might catch it. A cold could spell her end.
Best not, then. It's very unpleasant to be bedridden. I was stuck in bed as a child with a broken leg for some time.
Have you met my father?
I think your sister said he'd gone into town.
Oh, well. Perhaps he will come home, and you can meet him then. Do you write letters, Mr. Wells?
Yes, absolutely. I write a great many letters. Doesn't everyone?
Anyone of discernment. Anyone who seeks to declaim direct from their soul to the soul of another. Seeking to plumb the depths of the human heart. Anyone of any decency. Absolutely, Mr. Wells. May I write to you, then?
Well, that would be quite difficult. As I explained, I'm from another time. From the future.
Oh, yes, of course. Could I write to you in this time?
Well, let me think. It's 1868, so I'll be one. Maybe 2 years old. Not the most scintillating of correspondence, unless you find squalling and burbling entertaining.
Perhaps I will anyway. And your small self will receive confusing letters addressed to young Master Wells with a postmark from Massachusetts. And your mother and father will be confused.
Oh, please don't. I wouldn't want to have to explain that later.
Don't you fret, Mr. Wells. I won't interfere with your precious timeline. Are you feeling better?
Now that I've warmed up a bit, yes. Well, thank you.
Come over here to the window and let me show you my father's house and lands a little. From the window here, you can see many things. First, there is the garden.
It's very beautiful, especially the lilies of the valley.
Oh, to some they symbolize purity, chastity, humility. To others, death.
Of course. And whose house is that down the way? Is that your neighbor's?
Ah, that is Evergreen's. The house my father built for my brother, Austin, that is, when he married. He and Susie live there. Oh, my sister-in-law. Dear, sweet Susie. My own Susie.
Oh, dear. Have you fallen out with her?
No. No. We care for each other very much. She is like a sister to me. We are very close.
Oh, I see. That must be nice, having your family just across the wood from you.
Yes. So nearby. So nearby, indeed. And on the other side of the house is the great oak that my grandfather planted. Out there also is the final resting place of my beloved Carlo. I named him after that good old pointer that belonged to Mr. St. John Rivers in Jane Eyre. My father gave him to me, and at his full size, he was almost as large as I. My constant companion and my mute confederate. He died 2 years ago, my Carlo. And I have missed him ever since.
I'm sorry to hear that again.
Life seems brief enough for mankind, but for animals it is shorter still. They must think us immortal gods who watch their brief existence from on high, dispensing affection and food. Did I already offer you some cake?
Yes, it was very nice. I think I should probably take my leave. Thank you again for seeing me, Miss Dickinson. It was an experience. I'll see myself out.
Travel safely.
Thank you.
I hope it's not fatal.
That ends today's log, as indeed all things must end. I'm H.G. Wells, and today I find myself regretting the inevitability of my own mortality. The impending... Oh, good heaven, she's got me doing it as well. Oh dear.
This podcast was brought to you by Turpentine Productions. You can find us on Tumblr at Turpentine Productions, Twitter at H.G. Wells Regrets, and Facebook at H.G. Wells Has His Regrets. Or check out our website, www.hgwellshashisregrets.wordpress.com. This episode of H.G. Wells Has His Regrets was written by Lou Sutcliffe, with story assistance from Francesca Mylord Ford and produced by Francesca Mylord Ford. Music composed by Emily Hancock and Joe Ashkari, and sound designed by Howard White. This show was created and executive produced by Emily Hancock. H.G. Wells was voiced by James Carpenter. Emily Dickinson was voiced by Marnie Warner. This podcast is fictitious, and all characters within are merely fictional interpretations of the people they're based on and are not to be taken as serious or accurate portrayals. We'll end the episode with a quote from Emily Dickinson. "Fame is a bee, it has a song, it has a sting, ah too, it has a wing." Thanks for listening.